the Ministry Climate Resilience Study that was concluded. But the key question is, how are we aligning the institutions of states to be able to deliver in terms of this beautiful report? The next slide. Again, in that same resilience study, this is the policy, governance, and institutional arrangement that has been proffered. Interestingly for us, EPA, Office of the President, Parliament, all has oversight. National Development Planning Commission, I talked about data. Environmental Protection Agency, which is supposed to be at the apex of driving policy. The ministries are there, Community Water and Sanitation Agency, Ghana Water Limited, Water Resources Commission. They are all important state agencies. Ghana Geological Survey, Hydrological Authority, Ministry of Communication, and below you will find MMDAs, Metropolitan, Municipal, and District Assemblies. The National Development Planning Systems Act 480 mandates them to take planning seriously. The importance of this slide I'm painting is, how coordinated are these institutions? How coordinated are these institutions to ensure that when EPA is driving climate resilient agenda with a very clear policy direction, no other ministry or MDA is counteracting what EPA is doing? How are we responsive to coherent planning to avoid policy somersault? And that is the essence of this, with Parliament having oversight, which is very crucial. And that is what we also want to underscore. 261 MMDs are under Ministry of Local Government, providing critical services. How are these services reflective of climate resilience and responsiveness? How are they working with Institute of Planners? All of them are part of this governance equation. So this is the essence of this particular slide. Next. And so I have already spoken to this. How well is coordination among these institutions? How can we effectively promote resilient water services delivery in Ghana? What is the role of Minister of Local Government, Decentralization, and Rural Development? As we speak now, we're lucky from 2017 to be given a Ministry of Sanitation and Water Resources. Honestly, for all intents and purposes, the ministry has done well. Coordination used to be a problem because we used to have sanitation sitting somewhere, hygiene sitting somewhere, but with a defined Ministry of Sanitation and Water Resources, at least somehow we have a clear direction with water, sanitation, and hygiene coming together. But we still have challenges with coordination, especially with other allied ministries. We are doing well with coordinating with Ministry of Health, but in terms of wash in healthcare facilities, which is critical to promoting maternal and child health, the coordination could be better. School wash could be better. And MESTI, very critical. How are we coordinating with MESTI, and for that matter, EPE, to promote harmony in terms of institutional delivery? Next slide. What is the implementing arm of the Minister of Sanitation for water services delivery? We have advocated for the National Sanitation Authority below the national level. Minister of Sanitation is the policy arm. If we were to have a below National Sanitation Authority, just like many state agencies has authority, then that authority can have very clear defined relationship with institutions such as Institute of Engineers and what have you, and work closely with local government ministry to ensure that all the good intentions of coordination are promoted for effective and sustainable service delivery. And that has been hanging over the years. We think that come next year, in terms of institutional arrangement, National Sanitation Authority should be on the front burner. If we are not able to get it before December, it should be crucial next step come next year. Next slide. The water policy, which has just been launched by the ministry quite recently, has very good intentions for climate change. but it has also been asking critical questions about how they can relate. And our proposal is that with these good intentions in the water policy, we still need a very clear institutional arrangement. I won't spend time because previous speakers have only touched on these intentions coming from the new water policy. Next slide. And so from the water policy itself, it has mentioned limited institutional capacity and collaboration to analyze, interpret, and communicate drought and flood information to end users, which is crucial to stemming the tide of climate resilient water services. Next slide. We are also saying that for SDG 6, to be able to achieve it, it is crucial we look at our institutional arrangement. And I think a lot has been said also about the need to achieve all the SDGs, but without paying attention to WASH, we can forget about SDG 1 on ending hunger. We can forget about SDG 2 on poverty, SDG 1 poverty, SDG 2 hunger, SDG 3 good health, up to SDG 11, which talks about cities, and then SDG 13 on climate change, because WASH is central to everything about all the SDGs. So there's a need to pay critical attention to the overarching role of WASH. But the role of the youth is also crucial. The youth have freshness, they have innovation, they have the drive. So central to all our activities, we should also ensure that we prioritize the youth involvement in climate resilient water services, because they have a lot to also contribute to give us this attention. And there is the urgent need for all of us to be on board to promote multi-sector coordination to ensure climate resilient water services are delivered within a coherent institutional arrangement. Thank you very much. I think I'll end here.
I hope Ben have kept it. Thank you, Harold Eseku. He was asking whether he had kept to time. I will add you to the political party speakers. But we're all trying, all in an effort to ensure that WASH is given prime of place and that we, of course, try to mitigate climate change and the way forward. Thank you very much, our speakers from the World Bank and WASH Development, UNICEF Ghana, and WaterAid. Thank you very much. We'll quickly move on to our panel discussion, after which, and we're going to try to hasten a bit so that we can make up for lost time. After that, we'll have an open forum, and then we'll take the presentation of the resolutions, and we'll gradually come to the end of this program. Let me now quickly introduce to you the panel members. And the very first one is a seasoned development professional with over 15 years of experience in advocacy, policy influencing, and coordinating multi-donor funded programs across the water, sanitation, and hygiene, business advocacy, and educational sectors in Ghana and Uganda. For 12 years, she has been a key player in the WASH sector, focusing on policy advocacy and community participation to ensure rights-based access to water and sanitation services. As the Executive Secretary of the Coalition of NGOs in Water and Sanitation, that is CONUAS, she oversees the coalition's advocacy initiatives and manages the secretariat's operations. Her passion for human rights and gender equality drives her work, particularly in advocating better WASH services for women and girls. She also serves as the focal person for the African Network of Civil Society Organizations in Ghana, and is the CSO focal person for Sanitation and Water for All, coordinating national and regional advocacy efforts. Ladies and gentlemen, our viewers far and near, I give you Basilia Nambigne, Executive Secretary, Coalition of NGOs in Water and Sanitation. please sit in the middle for me. I want so that we can have a proper sandwich on the panel. Our next speaker or panel member is a global urban poverty fighter. He is former chairman of the Coalition of NGOs in Water and Sanitation. He is an inclusive urban development practitioner and the executive director of the People's Dialogue on Human Settlements. I give you Farouk Baima, please. Up next, he is a public health researcher and policy analyst with extensive experience in environmental and social determinants of health in low and middle income countries. From needs assessments, intervention design to policy analysis, his perspective is on the big picture. Using systemic thinking and the best evidence available to advise on the effective strategies to address entrenched social and environmental practices around gender, inequitable access to health services in low and middle income countries. He has a lot to offer on this discussion. In March 2024, President Akufo-Addo appointed him the executive director of the EPA, the Environmental Protection Agency. I give you Dr. John Kingsley Krugu. And finally, Dr. Krugu, you have to decide where you're going to. He is a strategic sector counselor on water, cities, and climate at the Embassy of Denmark in Ghana. He has experience from working in the Danish public and private sector, including the municipality of Frederiksberg in Copenhagen and the Confederation of Danish Industry, that is DI Water. And he has, through his career, worked within the utilities sector. He holds a master in marketing, or a master's in marketing and management anthropology from the Aarhus University. I don't know whether I murdered any of those names, but he is in the person of Matthias Thuborg Madsen. He is strategic sector counselor, Danish Embassy of Accra. Thank you very much. Please come this way. And I will join you from this end as we get into the conversation. Mr. Moderator also needs to rest his legs. So as you rest yours, I will rest mine. But just to kickstart the conversation, and I'm going to start with you, Basilia. They say ladies first. So I'm going to start from your end. And this question goes to each one of you. What would you say are your initial thoughts on the importance of providing climate-resilient wash infrastructure and services at the very basic level?
Okay, thank you. And we saw what Ibrahim presented as an overview of what climate resilient is, and which is, I would say, in my own way, as being able to anticipate, prepare, and respond to any climate shocks. And so if you are talking about climate resilient wash, it means that the infrastructure must be able to resist any climate shock. People who are using the infrastructure should be able to easily overcome any climate issues and be able to achieve sustainability of their wash services. So at the basic level, we are ensuring that communities, when there's a drought or there's flooding, they can quickly sustain their water, sanitation, and hygiene facilities and be able to use them without really staying back because of the climate shock.
Thank you very much for that response. Farouk, what would be your response on the same?
Thank you.
Let me check that. Yes, I believe you are. Yes,
I am. You are. Yeah, thank you. Yeah. My initial response is just to say that we've come a long way. I'm trying to just picture the historical pathway that we've treaded in the past, and I'm more convinced that within the climate seasons that we find ourselves in, the exigencies of climate, both governments that we heard speaking, and my colleague from the Butterfly Group, seem to be presenting evidence-based conversation rather than politically informed ideologies. And I think that is very inspiring to hear. Thank you.
Thank you very much for those initial thoughts. Dr. Krugu. Is that on? I think we should just check all the microphones to ensure that. Mathias, you might want to check your microphone in advance.
Thank you very much for the question. I think if you talk about, if you listen to the presentations that has taken place, I think it begs asking about the importance of climate resilient infrastructure. We don't have an option. We don't have a choice. That is the way to go. And if we do not do that, we are all in for big trouble. You know, I have to say that when I was sitting there listening to the political parties make presentations, I have, let me borrow the word wash to say, I've washed whatever I wanted to say here several times sitting there. And I think that, and I hope that we can lift the conversation to where you are pointing us as, to look at the importance of what we need to do. I don't want this conversation to be the competition between political parties as to who is the best political party and who has done the best. I think if we were to go that direction, we would not be listening to the figures that were presented here. So do not let's go into a competition for mediocre and lift this conversation at a high level and hope that. And I was just asking myself, for example, that at the point that political parties formed their manifestos committees and was announced to the public, whether WaterAid presented a paper to these committees, you know, because as we speak, Dr. Kokofu said that on Sunday, they are going to adore the MPP manifesto. And then Dr. Otukono says they adored the youth manifesto yesterday or so. Unfortunately, he said because it was youth, he didn't speak about climate wash because it was youth. Now, when we go this direction, the important question you are asking is going to be downplayed. And one of these political parties will take over power in 2025. So we need to lift the conversation and make sure that we consider that if we do not lay the basic infrastructure, all of us here have traveled to countries where the basic infrastructure for wash is so important. Let me give you a strange example. Yesterday, the NPP parliamentary candidate came to my constituency last 2 weeks. And then among the people who came wanted to use a washroom. Okay. And then they went looking for a washroom. They couldn't find one. So somebody said, let's go to the hospital. Most likely there's going to be a washroom. Then when they went to the hospital, when they entered into the washroom, what they saw, they had to contain whatever they wanted to wash. And so one of them called me and said, can you take steps to do something about what is in that hospital? I think those realities is what we need to deal with as we go into this debate and going into election 2024. And not competition as to 2006, I did better, 2008, I did better kind of conversation.
Right.
That will not take us to where we want to go. Thank you.
Thank you very much for those initial thoughts. Let's keep them bite-sized but punchy. Mathias?
Thank you very much. I will do brief. From our perspective as the Embassy of Denmark, we have long engagement here in Ghana through the NIDA, and I've work, my colleagues have worked with a lot of you, but from our standpoint, we are looking at the water cycle holistically. So regarding what we are doing, we need to see both water upstream and downstream. We need to connect and we need to have information. So to do climate resilient and have a good environment around our water bodies or downstream with wastewater, we need to have data. We need to have information to make the right decisions. And then we have to look at where we have most impact. And this is the way we can go towards like a preventive way of securing water and sanitation in the future. And just briefly touch upon that you couldn't find a toilet out there. I do think we also need to learn and listen to other sectors. Other sectors has been able to disrupt the market. Other sectors have been able to be innovative. For instance, look at the smartphones, the telephones. Many people don't even have electricity. They don't have water. They don't have a toilet. But they do have a charged phone, like out in Volta region, Upper West. I don't even know where they get the power from, but they can make the business from the phone. And I do think there are other industries, sectors that the water sector needs to learn from, both publicly and privately. And we need to have the public-private partnership to scale, to be able to reach the SDGs. That's from me. Thank you.
Thank you, Matthias, for those initial comments. And I feel this is probably one of the most basic things you could give somebody. You know, toilet facilities, proper sanitation. I don't know whether anybody spoke about Accra being the cleanest city in Africa, but no, who mentioned that? Nobody did. Okay, all right. It's good I didn't mention it. But let's get into the next one. Even as we talk about all of this, then we must also focus some attention on the Ministry for Sanitation and Water Resources. And I'm coming to you, Basilia. Within the current institutional arrangement for the ministry, how then do we place front and center climate resilient WASH services delivery into policy making? It's one thing espousing it, but how do we put it in policy for proper execution? Basilia.
Thank you very much. I must say that hitherto the ministry or even the sector was very low when it comes to climate issues. Mm. It's like climate was a concept we're all trying to grapple with. And anyone who wanted issues on climate ran straight to MESTI. But I can say that from a couple of years ago, the sector is beginning to come out more on climate and trying to do more around climate issues. And the water policy that was launched just a few months ago clearly spells out how climate issues should be tackled. And I must say, even the 2007 water policy touched on it, but it wasn't detailed. And we have the environmental sanitation policy being revived, and definitely climate issues will be anchored in it. Mm. Now we have a focal person for climate in the sanitation ministry, who is trying to work very closely with the Ministry of, with MESTI, EPA, to see how sanitation can be embedded well in our WASH sector. I can say the TRACFIN report, that's a tracking sanitation and water expenditure, for last year didn't show our ministry spending much on climate or the budgeting for it clearly. But with the new innovations coming and the focal person for it, it's hopeful that going forward, we will see our ministry or our policy department really, and then planning department really planning and budgeting for climate, because we can't have climate issues being run like a project in the ministry. It has to be properly streamlined. And I think it has to start with the policies that we are launching. We need a strategic plan to implement the policies. And this will go a long way to help the policy and budgeting units to really and appropriately plan for it, so that we don't expect that we get money from somewhere or we depend on development partners just to implement projects for climate, but it should be really mainstreamed. And so I think that's a call for us CSOs development partners and others to look at the next budgeting for the ministry. Since our policies are outlining it, let's look at what strategies can be developed and how we really budget for it and plan activities alongside. Thank you.
Thank you for those thoughts, Basilia. And of course, it also goes down to how you collaborate as the CSOs yourselves. But Farouk, on that same point, even as you add on, there are some who also say that the Ministry for Sanitation and Water Resources, lovely name, practically nothing being done. That is what some say. Do we still need to retain that ministry to execute this? What other alternatives exist?
Yeah, thank you so much. I think the question should rather be, what is the best institutional, financial, and organizational arrangement to deliver climate resilient WASH? Now, when we elevate the conversation to that level, it becomes very meaningful for engagement. It doesn't really bother so much on which institution, whether it's a ministry or it's an authority, but I think it's more about the prioritization of that particular sector and keeping us together. In fact, our history has been, and it's good to go back into history. Previously, you know the story better than I do. The Ghana Water Company, Ghana Water and Sewage Corporation, you split it, PNDC Law 207 comes, local governance comes in, you push it to local government ministry, it shifts away, we have sanitation ministry, Western Housing at the other side. And all of that, we were having serious challenges around maintaining a proper monitoring and targeting system. Because once you continue to have the ministry, you can't even, when we do budget tracking as CSOs, we need to pick our bags and go to finance and go to works and housing and come to local government and you don't find data. My take is that whichever form it takes, the sanitation, water, and hygiene must work together, they have to stay. And we are very, very unanimous on that. And we'll use the last energy in ourselves to protect this hard-gained fight that we've gone through. Just to wind up, I feel strongly the challenge is a water WASH governance problem. Because you see, if you follow the whole conversation, it doesn't really, really think, it's political. It's about governance. It's about the soft things that the institutions and structures that ensure that all of these finances and monitoring and arrangements for delivery are well kept. I want to propose strongly, and that's my take, that WASH is something that is assessed within a local environment. It is assessed in a housing environment. And so the local government's ministry, from the outset, when I started, I felt that there was a need for very important resource like water, like sanitation, must be very close to the doorsteps of the people. And during the emergencies, any of you who worked during the COVID, you would begin to appreciate why it should be in the local governance structures. Because clearly, when you move such projects up to the center, and you have a national sanitation authority, you would still have to provide the legs upon which they deliver. And so my personal one is that, look, irrespective of the name, we want to remain together. The water and sanitation must be prioritized. Every government that comes in must demonstrate how you're going to support this sector to work. Climate adaptation assessments has to be done to see what changes must we do. Look, we don't do redundancy planning here. We don't have redundancy infrastructure. And when they locked the streets of Accra, those who wanted to use their public toilets, when COVID came, in fact, in the slum communities, please remember, we're talking of about in Accra, about 60 to 70% living in informal settlements and slums. And so when we speak about policies and programs and where it should be, again, local governance. Because why? All of these things around putting social infrastructure and getting people to do behavioral change and getting people to budget for water and sanitation must happen within the accountability structures. Yeah. The central governments don't provide those accountability structures. In fact, the Act 936 is very clear. Section 40 to 48 provides very clear participation guidelines. And for CSOs, our best place to demand accountability, it is when it is placed within the local governance structure. I think I would want to pause here and then to see what colleagues will say. Thank you.
Thank you, Farouk. You just hit the nail on the head. Very, very insightful points you made. Sometimes even in resolving problems, you look at the solutions and the solutions don't technically address the problems where they ought to. Dr. Krugu, briefly on that point, and then I'll take brief remarks from
yes, very briefly indeed, and thank you, Farouk, for that comment. Me, I want to share my experience. I live in a different jurisdiction and came back to Ghana, and I went and settled in a municipality within Greater Accra. And so the following day, I said I was going to the municipal assembly to register, so that my resident in that municipality will be recognized. So when I got to the municipality, I was seen as a strange animal who had just dropped from Mars, because people asked me, what do you want to do? I said, I want to register, because, and I said, because if I don't register, who's going to be responsible for the sewage that I am going to generate? You know, who is going to, so I need to register and be sure who and where to pay what. It didn't exist. I did not have a place. And apparently I can live in that municipality for years, and the municipal assembly would not even know that a new entrant has come in to the municipality and I'm going to generate waste. So this is a tip of the iceberg of what you are talking about. And I hope that our policy making process and political parties thinking about the next government, we can see how we can indeed empower the local governance system to have these systems in place. Because the reason is because I moved from one municipality to another in the country where I was living, and I had to do detailed registration of all of these and pay for it because I am going to generate waste. So I think if we empower the local, the municipal, the MMDAs, and situate some of these things, you can have the ministry responsible for policy making, and there too we have a problem about this policy coherence. I was coordinating a project, and we had a big battle between EPA and Water Resources Commission as to a simple matter as to who is responsible for discharge into the water bodies. And as I speak, we had to go for a legal consultant to come and inform. And so this is important when we are making policies at all, when Parliament is enacting laws, to be able to have this policy coherence. That is also one of the issues that we need to. I need to be brief, so thank you.
Thank you very much, Dr. Krugu, on that. I'm wondering, from the Danish standpoint, policy, the examples you see, I always like examples that are palpable, ones that you have lived. Policy, the ministry, climate change, that nexus. From where you come, what do you see that perhaps we could implement here?
From our side at the Embassy of Denmark, we look at, I said it before, we look at data, we look at impact, regardless of any institutional framework. I think if you just look a little bit back in Denmark, we have one of the first Ministry of Environment, because we were facing similar issues. In 1973, we passed the first environmental law in the world, which means that we are building bridges across entities, public-private entities, to solve the issues, because we looked at, for instance, water as a holistic resource all around the value chain. Right now, we are also looking at numbers here in Ghana. That's the reason we have seen progress on the WASH situation. We have had water aid, and my good colleagues here, they're also sharing the progress been made. So what we are seeing now is that progress established new infrastructure, and we need to maintain that infrastructure. And that's the reason we have engaged in something we call the strategic sector cooperation. We do long-term commitment capacity building. Right now we have The second largest city of Denmark in Aarhus has a collaboration with Tema Metropolitan Assembly and Gainer Water. So we are looking at making sure Tema is climate resilient holistically, so it becomes a sustainable, livable city. This is the aim. So it's a multi-sided approach. There are many, many solutions, many challenges that need to be addressed. But I don't have the solutions, I don't think in the room, but the experts together can come up with solutions that are gonna be passed on also in an institutional framework in Tema. We do the same on the water side. We work on a target to make to assist Ghana Water in reducing the non-revenue water. And that's a multi-sided approach as well that we are coordinating. And then we also do multilateral with UNICEF, for instance. They're trying to do a revolving sanitary fund because private capital is also important. We need the private sector to be engaged in some of the aspects, because even though progress has been made, the data is saying that the SDG 6 in 2030 is still out of reach. So we need to accelerate, we need to disrupt, and that's the reason I'm telling, we need to also learn, look out from the water sector, we need to learn from other industries. Thank you.
Interesting thoughts you've just shared. Just hold on briefly for me. How long has this collaboration gone on, for example, with Tema, and what are the results you're seeing so far?
So we started in 2019, and I think we could have done more if COVID did not hit, because I think the most important thing in a strategic sector collaboration is that we match engineers, municipal expert from the city of Denmark to the same expert in Tema to solve the challenges they're facing right now. So they've done a climate adaptation wastewater management plan to look at holistically how to sort of deal with the wastewater. And I'm actually bringing Dr. Kruku to Denmark next week as well to show him how the municipality is working together with the Danish EPA, working together with the private sector to address some of the issues we're also facing in Tema, which is the industrial wastewater. And some of these public-private partnerships, they need to go all around. So that's how it goes right now.
Thank you, Matthias. For those of you catching us live, we're on Joy News. We're also coming your way on Joy 99.7 FM, myjoyonline.com, and all our social media platforms. It is that national engagement on WASH and climate change and how we can build resilience. I'll start with you this time, Farouk. When it comes to, I mean, some may ask, okay, so WASH and climate change, what do they really have in common? We have our emergency technical working groups and all of that. How can we do more in terms of highlighting the issues and working on them from these emergency technical groups?
Yes, like I said, we've heard this word for all the while, coordination. There's an institutional puzzle that we need to unravel. Mm-hmm. And this institutional puzzle is repeated in all the sectors. When you meet the educational sector, the health sector, they keep repeating this word. It's overflogged. Eh? Coordination. I think my worry is that when it comes to the relation between climate and WASH, I keep saying our sector is more like, I call it WASH sectors. Because clearly the things we deal with, to just reduce ourselves to a sector, sometimes people don't really get what we mean. But I think we work within the WASH sectors with an S. And whether it's water is a whole gamut of conversation in terms of the upstream, downstream, what we use. I don't think we, the WASH advocates, would want to grab a certain portion of the WASH conversation and then others will hold on to the sanitation, others will hold. In fact, solid waste and liquid waste is another ball game. These are different. Urban sanitation, rural sanitation are very different. The very structure within which we run, the urban water, Ghana Water, CWAC, that's a big conversation. In fact, I live in Oyarifa. The water starts, it's a small town, Oyarifa, Bokubi, Tema, water systems. Now, Ghana Water is just to my right, also on South Street, is Ghana Water. When you pass my house, like 400 meters off my house, there's a Ghana Water line. Yet, I'm in the community water systems. I think the problems are way, way beyond conversations and institutions. I think we need to crack the whip. The whip is that there's a need for some level of equity lens to be brought on bear. Now, when we say equity, we are more looking at how this WASH conversation, in terms of its incomes, in terms of its risks, and then in terms of the burden that it brings on people, needs to be evaluated. Now, once we evaluate them, then you begin to understand the varying impacts of climate. Because the climate conversation is a function of your adaptive capacity. And so if you assume that everybody has the same adaptive capacities, and you begin to sit in the ministries, and then you run a policy on adaptation, and you want to see the stress level, you want to see the attributes of the system, you want to check the, if you like, the reliability or availability, affordability, efficiency, all of these are context specific. And so I would clearly say that we need to be very minded on boxing the whole conversation as though water and sanitation and climate have this. If it's a drought area in the north, I agree in the north, in the Tamale, Tutele areas and all of those, but water is a very scarce resource. And every day people will have to struggle for drinking water. Now, my question is that if you don't really appreciate the drought conversations that they have in the north, and you want to bring solutions, you really will not solve the problem. So data, I'm just trying to emphasize on my colleagues' information that we don't have the data. Unfortunately, these kinds of data that we have normally been generated by mostly some CSO generate data. And because of the conversation around official statistics, and politicians don't want to hear the truth on the ground. And so they will frustrate you when you want to feed your data into the national system. Right. And so I think that we need to be very open. Water is life, and all of us need a certain volume of water to survive. This discussion is not so much about, like he said, who is right and who is wrong. I think collectively, if we can focus on how climate is going to worsen the situation, it's so scary. Climate is consistently worsening. In the urban areas, when it rains, the whole infrastructure, the waste that they generate there, the cemeteries that we have, and the water runs through the surface water. In the urban systems, we do surface water. And so the fear is that if you don't treat the collective inclusive model for informal settlements and the poor people who live in the slums, they shit openly. You eat their feces, sorry. But the point is that at what stage are we going to sit back and talk about climate in a way that it becomes too remote? Our problem is governance, investment, and prioritization. Once we're able to do this, the global agenda has set something that is difficult to change. There is a global monitoring system that requires our ministers of water and sanitation to conform. And it's also, this discussion is not so much of just wishing a ministry away. There are steps that you need to conform to, because we're part of a global community, and the WHO and the GLAS systems that we monitor, the sanitation ministers meet with the finance ministers on high level to discuss global issues. We need to be part of the global alignment framework to be able to report inconsistently. So I think it's not so much of just wishing away a ministry, but I think we should really sit back with the political parties and then get them to understand what exactly is the situation on the ground. It's not a binary conversation. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Farouk, for adding so much to this conversation. I'd just like to encourage all of you who are actually watching us live on Joy News, and those who also may be following on radio, you can just connect on the live feed, send us a message on Joy News, the live feed, and we'll actually bring it out. If you have any concerns, any questions, any contributions, you can share them from there. I see Engineer Kwabene Japong. At the right time, I'll come to you so that you can add your submissions. But some of those that have come through already, Kalungu Naruhito Samandi. I don't know whether the Japanese have, you know, come to town. He says, good program. Fatim Mohammed says, okay, watching you. Dr. Kurugu, your constituents are watching us from Zabila. We also have Abdul Nashiru Mohammed, who says the overview was comprehensive. A compelling case has been made for practical action over business as usual. I hope the politicians are listening. Business as usual, no more. This one says, to achieve SDG 6 and SDG 13, and this is where I'll end for now, we must involve community members, come out with action plans, allow the communique to pass their, or the communities to pass their own sanitation bylaws and set up sanitation and forestry committees. These were the things we implemented at Mauli Estate Community, and the community attained a status as the first urban community in Ghana with open defecation-free areas. And he actually ends with a phone number there with a link as well that we can check out. And I see one Prosper Makum coming back to say, this is true. I lived so close to that place in Ho, and I know the place. And even till now, I can still see your litter bins around. So if some communities can move forward and do this, why can't we replicate that on a national level? And even as we have this conversation, when we talk about sanitation, we are all involved. How about those of us who go around and you are littering everywhere? In fact, you see some people do the wrong thing and you tell them and they bash you off. You are the too knowing person who is trying to, you know, sit on their happiness. But coming back to you, Dr. Krugel, you know, we've spoken about a national adaptation plan. There is currently a review going on. The previous plan, as we know, it did not prioritize the WASH sector. Now, given the importance of WASH-related issues, I want to find out, as head of the EPA, what can we learn about your current efforts to prioritize WASH in the development of this new national adaptation plan? What role are you playing?
Thank you very much. I think the link between climate change and WASH is very clear. We cannot, climate change causes drought that causes water scarcity, and that affects sanitation. Climate change causes intense rainfall that causes flooding. And anytime there is flooding, you need to think about the fact that nature has no break. So when you see in your television that the place is flooded, and those who do not have sanitation facilities at home, you ask yourself what is going on there. So clearly the link is there. And I think the EPA, as you rightly said, the plan is being reviewed. But one of the important steps that has been taken, and working closely with UNICEF and UNESCO also, is how to address some of the worries that were expressed here about institutional and behavioral changes. And you know that the EPA has taken these steps to put this climate change education in the school curriculum, for example, because it's almost clear that with adults, it's very difficult to change attitude and behavior. But if we can start and catch them young, then people can imbibe with that attitude, because the basic problem is attitude. If your attitude is positive, you would perform the behavior. And so I think in the next few weeks, the minister responsible for environment, technology innovation, would formally launch the climate change education program and hand the official copy to the Ghana Education Services. So that is also going to feature prominently in the revision work that is ongoing to make sure that we can put climate change education on the forefront, and that will inform how young people can imbibe the idea of water and sanitation and see how the connection with climate change will have an impact in the next generation. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let me go now to Basilia. The Ministry for Local Government and Rural Development, for you, from where you sit, looking at their current functions, what they do, how does this discussion fit them? What more could they do when it comes to the practicality of the policies we keep talking about? From where you sit, the office you occupy, what more would you like to see from them? And is that where our focus should be, the Ministry of Local Government and Rural Development? I know Farouk touched on that in different ways, but I want to take what your thoughts are on that.
Okay. So just like Farouk said, I think our MMDAs are under the ministry. Mm. And in as much as we have different sectors setting up different policies, everything is being implemented at the local level. And so when we talk about service delivery, it's at the local level and not at the national level, not at the ministries. Ministries are made, are supposed to make policies and provide guidelines, but the real implementation is at the local level. And so for us as CSOs, let me just pick some of his words. If we want to see how much efforts we are making in sanitation delivery, definitely we want to see it at the local level. But for us, we think that in as much as we have our water ministry making policies and the local government being in charge of local government delivery, the coordination should be strengthened. And let me borrow from him, it's not the the issue about one ministry is not doing well or breaking up a ministry or so. Ministries are supposed to make policy and provide directions. And so for the Ministry of Sanitation, for instance, we have the water sector, the water side doing very well. And why is that? Because it has the agencies that work all the way to the local level to provide service delivery. We have the water resources doing well. We have the Ghana Water providing water for urban. We have the community water and sanitation providing, focusing on the rural and managing we the NGOs and private sector at the rural to provide water. Now when we come to sanitation, when we get to the sanitation directorate, that is all. And that's why for the sector, we've always been saying that we need that linkage that the water has to the ground. That is the only way we can also ensure that there is effective delivery. We need some key connection between that ministry and the local level. We have the School of Hygiene, which is currently under the Ministry of Sanitation and Water Resources. But when the students go out, they are under local government, under the local government ministry, because they work under the local government level. Now, for us, the sanitation authority is key to provide regulation, because currently you can't tell, okay, we are regulating sanitation. I don't see the practical documents on it. Maybe you go to an MMDA level and see maybe a bylaw or something. We need that overarching regulations. We need policy direct to break down the policy implementation. Something that will bridge, just like CWC is bridging between district assemblies and the community in water delivery, we need that kind of bridge between our local government ministry and the sanitation to ensure that there is effective service delivery at the local level. So I think that the ministry is important, but the coordination role is where they need to be strengthened. And the MSA coming can really provide that strength. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Basilia. Matthias, you would hear Basilia talking about creating that bridge, that nexus, and coordination. From where you sit, looking at our structure, from the ministries down to the agencies, down to the the districts and all of that, do you feel it is too top-heavy? So from the top, instead of access trickling down all the way to the least units, what do you see?
I think from my standpoint, I cannot really say if it's too top down or not, like, because I cannot, what should I compare it to, right? We cannot take like a political framework in isolation, but I definitely agree a lot with Basilia that you have to recognize complexities. So if you do something, it has a lot of impact on a lot of other stuff, and that's the reason we need to see the water cycle holistically. You need to see climate and sustainability as holistic. And also have to mention that we cannot do more harm, because if you do more harm, then of course we make things work. But if you can make a positive impact, I think it will have a positive impact also on the institutional frameworks. And then I definitely agree that like everyone can be better building bridges, not only within the ministries and agencies, it's also within the DPs, it's within the NGOs and so forth. Kunivas is doing a good job in trying to build the bridges, but also the people out in the community, the outreach, and also not look at the WASC sector in isolation. We still need to learn from other sectors. Other sectors can learn from us. So having the multi-sided approach and recognize that, I think that's very important.
Thank you, Matthias. Let me come back to Farouk, and I'm coming back to the CSOs and others. As far as an institutional arrangement scenario is concerned, what is the sector's preferred arrangement? What would be the worst case scenario and the possible compromises to be made? I know that's a loaded one, but take your time and unpack it for us.
Okay. Worst case scenario, like I said, it's a no to split the water and sanitation functions. So that's a no. And
we should maintain a ministry for it?
That's another conversation, but it's a no to split the two. So we want the water, sanitation, and hygiene to remain intact. How you do that is an art of governance, and we need to get there. Okay. Now, why am I saying this? Again, it's important to appreciate why I'm saying what I'm saying. It's a historical conversation. There's a trajectory that we've come a long way. And gone are the days when, my brother, the kind of data you present in the global front, I work globally, and I meet politicians for Africa who just present data which is not real. And it is not the fault of the digital assembly or the political party or the civil servant. He has no data. And he's supposed to present the SDG, MDG report on slums, for example. I see my colleagues in those international seminars, and the kinds of data they present, you can tell this is very inaccurate. And so today, with the ministry that we have, we've gone very far in terms of ensuring that at least we are able to see through, let me call it a single spine approach to the data monitoring and data measurement, and then ensuring that the targeting is done in a certain way that is very, very formal. Mm. And I think that is something we are not ready to lose at all. I think we are together, right? Good. So it's something we are not ready to lose. Now, right. Point two. My second point, as CSOs, I go for what I would term, and others have used the term, it's more like institutional pluralism. Institutional pluralism will mean that you identify the roles and who is best fit to do the role and responsibility, and then you allow them to perform. It doesn't matter whether it's Ministry A or Ministry B. So once you allow people to perform what they are best at, and then there's a coordination, and that's what the ministry does best. We needed somebody to defend our budgets in the Parliament of Ghana, for example. When I was doing this kind of work, sometimes I became so frustrated that we felt like an orphan, Basi. And so here we are, we want to present a case to government, and you need to set an agenda. Politics is about power, trade-offs, and you need to give and take. We didn't have one. You go to the Western Housing Ministry, and then they discuss water. There was a water directorate. I don't know, is it still there? It's moved to the ministry, right? There was a water directorate. The PURC handles one, Water Resource Commission, CWS, SA. These institutions are too many for us to handle. So we felt, and I was one of them, I used to check on us, we really wanted the ministry. We did. It was a need. We needed it. Now, 8 years down the line, it's also wise for us to do a review. Now, when we do the review on a very honest and real situations on the ground, not on political, ideological basis, and I insist. Once we do that, then we are able to tell that, look, this ministry is creating some level of, whether it's a parallel structure or some, we don't have the resources at the moment. So I, from where I sit, my question is, do we want to replicate the legs and the arms of the sanitation ministry into the districts? If no, the NSA, we've proposed that for quite some time now. How does the NSA help to support, to answer that question of of the ministry performing on the ground. If we collectively feel that, and it's a cost and benefit analysis, please. This is not a conversation that you use grammar to who works somebody in. You need to provide science behind the conversation. And let's have this conversation, and I think we can get this rivaled. What we hate to see is when the two parties begin to play the game with this very important sector. It's our life, and we are saying clearly that when the politicians and the political elite, when I use the word, I use it wisely, this is a political elite. And so my understanding is that anytime the political elite wants to, for some reason, deny citizens the right to participate and drive their own lives, they centralize the whole issues. And I have a problem with re-centralization, because my worry is that at the same time that we want to see the ministry running, what are the accountability mechanisms? At what stage who do you hold responsible when you have water issues? It shouldn't be the Ministry of Sanitation. It should be my local authority. So if I have problems of efficiency, problem of bad water, I should go to the assembly. How do we balance the coordination? How do you bring all of this to bear? If the NSA is what does it, so be it. If the ministry must go for more efficient ones, so be it. I think we are not politicians. We are advocates for WASH. And I would go for whatever solutions that allows a climate resilient WASH to be done. And then it also allows the distribution of what I call authority, voice, and then access. Once you're able to distribute, your voice is very important in all of this conversation. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Farouk. I'll come to Basilia before I come back to Dr. Kurugu. And I just want your assessment on this, the Greater Accra Metropolitan Areas Sanitation and Water Project. So far, what do you see to be the achievements under the Water and Sanitation Project over the period, and in terms of what costs may have been put forward, what we have expended on these projects, from where you sit, what do you think have been the achievements so far of that project?
Well, before I start, I will say that engineer was here to share with us some of the highlights of what the project has achieved. And I will say that he did mention
He will come in a bit.
Yes, he did mention the number of households that they've been able to reach. And I would say that has increased with the coverage from the period that they have come. Looking at Accra alone, it was very difficult to provide sanitation, especially choked areas like Choco and other places. But introducing that model, that simple sanitation model, the biodigester, helped every household to get access. So urban areas, the issue about access to toilet in urban areas was being solved. It has greatly reduced, because now you can access it, and it is happening in the greater Kumasi as well. And when the NDC gentleman was talking, you mentioned about sewage lines. I think the sanitation project was able to expand about 75 kilometer sewage line also at the Bankuma Ashama municipality, which will also be able to reach in Jinazi about 40,000 households or so. Yes. So you can say that it's been able to achieve a lot. It's been able to increase access, especially to urban population, which was very difficult to access because of the ways, the choked nature of the settlements. But I think that the project was able to break through that kind of situation to enable a lot of urban communities have access. It's now a household name in Ga and in Kumasi, because people are able to really have access to toilets. Hitherto, you say you want to, you need space to get septic, and without the space, you cannot access toilets. Now, you don't need a septic tank, but you can access toilets. So I would say, in my opinion, it's really a great project and has benefited a lot of Ghanaians. And has also increased on our access. Thank you.
Thank you, Basilia. Dr. Krugel, any reflections on that? That is, if you have any, before we move.
I can't speak of achievement of GARIT in that direction. But so I
Gama.
Have two quick, yeah, Gama.
The right? Gama sanitation
water. I have two quick interventions. One of them is what Farouk speaks about, institutional pluralism, and the simple fact of identifying rules and making people perform them. In practice, this normally works until resources comes in. What I see is the tussle over the control of resources, and that is where these rules become an issue. And so I think that is an area to look at. When we set up these agencies and authorities and all of that, we need to also make sure that they have the resources to be able to perform. The other thing has to do with data. I think both of you has made reference to data. I think we also need to look at the local governance system, the municipal assembly or district assembly. When you walk in there, which office is paying attention to data? Mm-hmm. You know, the example I gave earlier on, if you do not even know how many people are living within a particular jurisdiction, you just have a problem from day one. Because it means that you also have no idea what solid or liquid waste is being generated and where is that going to. And so data, we also need to look at it at the local governance level and see how to strengthen that. My last intervention is to supply information. I listened to Courage make a proposal that if the Movement for Change wins power, they would transform the EPA into an authority. And just for us to lift the debate, one of the reasons why the majority leader appealed to the speaker to reconvene parliament is to be able to pass the EPA bill into law. And we are hoping that when they come back in the first week of September, we'll be able to get that law passed. So you can focus on the implementation of that law in 2025. Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much for these thoughts. Now, moving the conversation forward, and I'll be coming to you as well, the political parties. We'll hear from Kwabena Japong on a number of matters. But I just want to find out, what then is the next step? As we sit here this evening, what is the most critical step we need to take? What would be your recommendations, your takeaways that we have to keep in mind as we get ready to wrap up on this conversation? I'll start with Matthias on this one.
Yes, okay. I think from my side is that everyone looks into each your organizations and within the public sector, within the NGOs and so forth, and look at all the people, the young and the older ones with a drive, and embrace that drive to move forward, because I think that's where innovation is happening. I know there's a lot of good initiatives. Ghana Water, for instance, are gathering all young water professionals right now and trying to work towards being more innovative in their approaches and so forth. And I do think by embracing the drive within organizations is very important, because I think to move ahead, it has to be people-driven. So I think that's my thoughts on this.
It must be people-driven, definitely. Basilia?
Okay, so I would say, and I repeat what my big brother has been saying, do not separate.
Which one of them is your big brother, Farouk?
Farouk. He was my chairman some few years back. Do not separate water, sanitation, and hygiene, no matter what you do. Mm. But I feel that the MSWR, if political parties feel it's not working well, it could be rebranded to work the way it is. It's not an issue about scrubbing off ministries, but rebrand it and make it work and look at the critical issues it's supposed to achieve. The important thing is governance. If the right governance is in place, it will work well. And do not forget the National Sanitation Authority. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Farouk, what would you like to leave us with? Dr. Kruger, I'll come to you last.
To be blunt on the conversation, I want just to repeat that it's a local governance crisis. The climate conversation, the water sanitation.
It's a local governance crisis.
Yeah, the kind of challenges we're facing on